I really thought like I was coming back to Bentley for my like fifth year. Cause I mean, it was like the dream basketball scenario for me. Like I really just, I love Coach Lawson. I have my best friends there and I love the way the program's run.
All right, we are back with another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here with my co-host, Neruda Perdomo. Really good episode today. D3 season finally finished. Trinity, your national champion. So I don't know if you want to talk about that. Life, you could take it however you want, bro. How are you?
Yeah, bro. Crazy that the year is over. I mean, you know, we always say this, that, you know, these years kind of fly by kind of after your freshman year. Stuff kind of just starts going, bro. But it's been a great year just for Division III hoops, man. I think you touched on it earlier about how, like, a lot of the conference championship games were, like, sold out this year and how, like, the fandom in Division III kind of reached a different level with just people being more aware. So I think there's a lot of progress this year for that. In terms of, like, the D3 media, there was a lot of progress. I mean, we kind of came out onto the scene really from, like, start to finish throughout the whole season. You know what I'm saying? And obviously Bob Quillman, Dave McHugh at D3 Hoopsville, you know, D3 Datacast, all those guys was, you know what I'm saying, doing their part as well to keep the ship rolling. But obviously congrats to Trinity, dude. I mean, Final Four last year, Natty Chip this year. I mean, that's a crazy resume. I'm not gonna lie, for any of those guys on the team. So definitely shout out all the Trinity guys. And you know, we saw NESCAC versus UAA at the highest stage, bro. And NESCAC pulled it out, man. Trinity, tough group, but yeah, definitely crazy and great year though.
No, yeah, I mean, I really don't have much to say. You covered everything pretty well. I will say I was rooting for NYU in the chip. We talked with Tristan and Hampton. They played good, but they had a really good season. But like you said, shout out to Trinity. And I'm not going to talk too much about the national championship. We got someone coming on later in the episode for that. But you want to talk about today's episode? You got anything else you want to shout out?
I mean, nah, not necessarily. I mean, you know, just really excited for today's episode, though. I mean, with Zach, it was a great one. I don't know if you want to do a quick introduction on him for the audience.
Nah, yeah, Zach LaPute from Connecticut. Went to Bentley for 4 years, had a really good career, NE10 player of the year. He was kind of dominating in the NE10. Okay. Bentley was also winning some games, so he had a mixture of both. But then for his final year, grad school year, went to Davidson. And, you know, it wasn't like a crazy jump for him because he was still starting for a really good program in Davidson, playing in the A10, which we talked about all of that. But, I mean, Zach, just a really good guy. So I want to hear, like, what you thought about talking with him in this episode.
Great episode, like I said, bro. Great conversation, too. I mean, Zach was a solid dude. You know what I mean? Had a lot to say. Was bringing a lot of insight into the conversation, you know, regarding transfer portal. I thought that was a cool conversation that we had. You know, talking about his adjustment with different coaches. You know what I mean? That's kind of like a under-discussed topic, just in terms of, like, you know, you've had a coach for 4 years that you really built a connection with, and then, you know, for your 1 year, you're getting coached by someone else, and they have a completely different style, the way they look at basketball, so you got to make those adjustments. So I thought him bringing his insight was really cool with that.
Especially, like, he loves Coach Lawson at Bentley, yeah. So it's kind of when you transition and you get this, like, new perspective, it's like you kind of got your guard up in a way. Like, I don't really know. You're completely different from my other coach, who I think is the greatest coach. So now listening to you is kind of like, I don't really know if I'm jacking that. But, I mean, Zach still had a really good year, but I didn't mean to cut you off. You keep going.
Nah, you're 100% right. He did have a good year. I mean, he started clicking at the end. I think you kind of mentioned it in the episode. Like, he started coming off the bench, and like he was saying, like, Superman's coming in. So you could tell, like, he's a pretty confident dude in his abilities. But I also think that comes from he trusts the work. Like, he's a grinder, dude. Like, he talked about, you know, we had, like, a basketball nerd conversation about, you know, building workouts and stuff like that. And just hearing how he was describing workouts, like, he knows what he's talking about, bro. He knows exactly what he's talking about with, like, playing off of reactions. You know what I mean? Like, audio-based calls and workouts. Like, that's a lot of – that's high-level stuff that, like, you don't see in a lot of college workouts nowadays. The ones that I've watched, at least, you know what I mean? It's starting to change with, like, people putting more awareness on, like, you know, straight lit approach with Mitch, or like the audio based, you know, hearing reactions and stuff like that. But yeah, great conversation, bro, with Zach, and I'm really excited to see what he does in the future with professional basketball.
No, yeah, Zach is nice, bro. Like, his stats, he averaged around 9 points per game, a role player, but like at Bentley, he was turning up, and I feel like that transition is always tough, especially just for 1 year. You got to get used to everything, but like, he's a good player, bro. And we talked about it in the episode, but he's not doing nothing crazy. It's just like really fundamental and skilled. So I got a lot of respect for bro. But you mentioned like the transfer portal / NIL conversation. I was wondering what you think about this. I know like we haven't talked about this, but like this year in the Sweet 16, there's only Power 5 schools in the Sweet 16. I think this is the first time, maybe, I don't want to say ever, but like in a long time.
A long time, yeah.
So I was just curious, like, do you think that, because my thoughts is that it's always going to take an extra few years for, like, it starts high major, and then mid-major will get into a low major, and then it'll start fluctuating to other divisions. But I was wondering if you think this is something permanent that's, like, nah, it's always going to be like this, where Power 5s and their advantages in NIL is just going to, like, make them dominate. And when we see those matchups, like, head-to-head.
I think that there's a couple of different things I wanted to talk about that you just brought up. I think the first thing you're saying, like, how it's going to, like, come down to different divisions or, like, mid-major and low-major. Can you, like, describe more what you're talking about with that?
Like, so, like, what I'm thinking is, so right now we're hearing, we don't know for a fact, but, like, these players that are transferring to, say, like, Kentucky, Kansas, those bigger schools, like, they're just getting thrown a bag. But now we're seeing, like, these mid-majors are seeing that, and now we're seeing like Steph Curry and Davidson or Woj and Bonnies, where I think NIL is about to start going into theirs, and they're going to be able to bring in that high level talent that those high majors were just getting. So I think it's just going to keep like trickling down as the years continue.
Okay. That's pretty interesting, bro. I think like, all right. So, cause like the conversation all kind of ties together that what we're talking about, like with the money fluctuating and stuff like that. So I'll start from the jump from what I think, like, With the Sweet 16 only being like high majors, right? A lot of these teams are like poaching basically like the mid-major players or low major that are like killing and like bringing them to that level. And that if they feel like they can contribute, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like then some of the mid-major teams are going to lose some of like their inherited talent already, like the homegrown talent. And they're going to go, you know, realistically, like you probably only have like a 1 to 2 year run with like a lot of high level mid-major players at this point. Like it's like, if they kill, I don't know about this next year if they're gonna come back. You know what I mean? After two. So like that's a point that, you know, I've seen like commented on just how like the high majors are taking the mid-major players. So I think that's kind of part of it with like the NIL, like they're just taking those better players. And also another thing, like a lot of the coaches are now like doing like their own little transfer portal. Like they're staying out of school for 2 years, 2 to 3 years, trying to build a program up into like, you know, an NCAA tournament caliber team and then go into a high major school. Think, you know, VCU to Virginia, or he went to UMBC to VCU to Virginia. So he's hitting low, oh, mid, high. OD, you know what, yeah, I mean? And then Will Wade was, I'm pretty sure he was at LSU. Then he went to McNeese. And then now he's back in high major with NC State. Right. So now it's happening at like the coaching levels too. So you asked me if I think it's like a bad thing or
not necessarily bad. I was just thinking like, do you think that is going to be consistent where like the high majors are clearly the ones that are going to be playing late March, like, or is it going to be more competitive as the years go on?
All right. So this is where like it ties into like the money thing, because like the money relative to like a mid-major conference is going to be different to like a SEC school or ACC school. You know what I mean? So like the type of player that they can get potentially, right? Because like maybe like the mid-major player might get paid less, but he might be like better skill wise than the high major player. You just don't know until they're in the gym. But just like the money is going to be completely different. So like the type of player they can attract is going to be different. You know what I mean? So I could see, I mean, I don't know. It's tough, bro. It's tough. I still think, you know, mid-majors are going to figure out a way to stay relevant. You know what I mean? It's just the low majors that I'm kind of worried about. Like St. Francis just closed down to D3. I mean, you know, I love Division III and it's pure basketball, but like, you know, it's kind of sucks for like their athletes, you know what I'm saying, that committed there or on scholarship.
Hartford did that the other year. Yep.
Yeah. And like, there's another school I saw online So it's just like, it's just crazy, bro, how that's happening. So I don't know if it's going to come down to the low majors. I think low majors is just going to have to grind, just grind, bro. I mean, like,
but I have I have a point about that. Like, you mentioned how the players that are killing low and mid major, they're going to go high, but it's also like, when you commit, these people that are committed to high majors but aren't getting love like at their original school, they're going to go down to mid majors. So I think it's all just going to be opportunity, and we're really going to see like if you got it or if you don't, bro. Like, people always say, like, if you're good, like, people are going to see you. And I think that's going to happen, bro. Like, with the transfer portal, all these athletes are getting opportunities to like play at the next level or play at a different level. So I just
Minnesota big man, bro. He just committed to St. Bonnie's, bro. He's going down a little bit, but you know what I'm saying? He's looking for that bigger opportunity, most likely.
And he might kill in the A-10, but I got a lot more thoughts, bro. We got to record with someone. We're late with them, so I'm not going to keep it too long. But definitely a great episode with Zach. We talked about a lot, so stay with us, and let's hear from Zach LaPut. All right, we are here with our guy, Zach LaPut. Did I say it right? LaPut?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, we're here with Zach LaPut. How you doing today, bro?
Good, you guys?
Chilling, bro. Happy to get you on. What you been doing today?
Just been getting ready, planning my off-season program right now, and going to watch the March Madness games a little bit later today.
Word. What's the off-season looking like? When you say off-season program, is it like a basketball-centric, or are you focused on weightlifting? Which one?
Yeah, it's mostly going to be basketball. At this point, I'm not lifting as much, more just trying to maintain strength, if anything. Just trying to get in really good shape this offseason. Definitely need to get my conditioning way better. So it's just a lot of live play, a lot of conditioning and skill work mostly.
Do you have like a trainer or someone that's like showing you what you should be doing, or you're super like you can read your game the best? Talk to me about like how you're developing that program.
Yeah, I like training myself the most my career, because I feel like I know myself better than any trainer can. And even if a trainer has a really good drill, the drill I might have might not be as good as theirs, but I could at least like visualize like how it's like impacting my game and will translate to the real game. So I like doing it that way.
I had a quick question about like the weight room. Were there any differences you've seen in like the weight room plan from Bentley to Davidson or nah?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in terms of like the resources, yeah, it was very different. Like, I actually preferred the way we did it at Bentley more. We didn't use the strength coach at Bentley because, you know, like your 6 foot 160 point guard shouldn't be lifting the same as, you know, your 6'8", 240 big. Like, those guys shouldn't be doing the same thing. Like,
agreed.
So, you know, we kind of just took the approach like everyone could do whatever is best for them. And I've always kind of like training myself, you know, since I was in high school. So I like doing it that way because I know what I need to work on, and bench pressing for me is not going to make me better. You know, just getting as quick as I can is what I need to do. So I like that approach. At Davidson, the resources here have been kind of crazy. But we had a strength coach. We were lifting a lot, which, you know, was good for me for the summer, but throughout the course of a season, not the most ideal thing for me, who's not naturally the most athletic guy. You know, I need to move as good as I can. So that was, just the difference between the two of them.
Yeah, I'm looking at Davidson's weight room right now online. You definitely had a lot of resources, bro. But I want to talk a little about the A-10 tournament. I know you guys won the first game that you guys were in, lost the second game. But I'm just curious, like, because I was there, the energy was pretty high. I was just wondering, like, how you felt playing in that environment, and then maybe, like, takeaways watching the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty surreal experience. We were playing in the Washington Wizards Arena, you know, just coming out of high school, no D1 offers to, you know, finishing my college career in the Wizards Arena. I mean, that was pretty crazy for me. Going into the tournament, I mean, I was just – of the mindset, like, I was kind of ready for either outcome to happen every day, honestly. Like, going into when we landed in DC, like, I was ready. Like, if we lost the next day, like, I was like at peace with how my career has gone. But if we won, like I was fully ready to, you know, just lock in for the next 24 hours straight and just keep the thing rolling as long as I can. So I felt like I was in a healthy mindset for that tournament, and it was probably the best I played all year towards the end of the year. So I would say I was in a pretty good headspace for that tournament.
Yeah. We kind of talked about this before we got on air, but like towards the end of the year, you started coming off the bench. Like you started majority of the year, but like towards the end and in the A-10 tournament, you was coming off the bench. Was there like a mindset switch for you? Like I got to provide something different, or it was just the same? You just were hitting shots.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little different. Like I had a lot of different roles this year. Like this year was very different for me than what I've experienced really like my whole basketball career. I started off as a new guy, and I've always been a 2-3, and the returning 2 and 3 from last year were starters, already highly established players in the league. So I was coming off the bench for the first like 10 games of the year, maybe as like a 6-man type role. And then our center went out with an injury. And so I got put into the starting lineup for maybe the next like 16 to 18 games, something like that. And we were playing 4 true guards, so it was really good offensively. But size-wise in A-10 play, it was a little bit tougher for us. So then I went back to like the 6-man type role for the last like 5 games of the year. And yeah, I mean, when I was coming in off the bench, like I always just thought like my mindset was like Superman's coming in the game, like, you know, whatever, if we're down, which we were a lot of games to start first 5 minutes, like obviously in conference records show that, but we were down, just coming in like, all right, I'm like, I'm going to be a game wrecker. And, you know, I'm just going to come in and, you know, give my team like the energy we need. And when I was a starter, I felt like I was, you know, setting the tone for the game. Like I was always trying to just hit guys as much as possible. And, you know, playing Ed Davidson with the, you know, roster makeup of our guys, you know, we need more edge, more like physicality and toughness that probably is not as natural for us as other teams in our league. So I always felt like my role for this team with a lot of returners on the team was to just like set the tone every game and be like a spark club energy, physical, like be ready to for whatever, you know, like be that kind of guy for our team.
Word. I mean, a lot of respect to you. Just the fact that you're coming into a new situation and you're able to like kind of figure out what the team needs on the fly, right? And you're kind of ready. You're ready for anything. Like you said, like it's either you're starting and you're setting the tone, trying to get other guys involved, or you, like you said, you're coming off the bench and it's Superman time. You're coming in and helping the guys out. So definitely shows that you're like, you know what I'm saying, like a college basketball player that's been around, that knows the game, that you're able to like make those adjustments on the fly, bro.
I appreciate that. It helps when you're in your fifth year too, so.
For sure, bro. I mean, you guys, I mean, Coach McKillop too, that's coach there at Davidson, right?
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So he's a really good coach himself, comes from the great tree. What type of impact did he have on you throughout this year, just through communicating and whatnot?
Yeah. Playing for him was a lot different experience than my previous experience for Bentley. So Coach McKillop, very smart. Like he's very good with the analytics thinking part of the game. And it was very different in a lot of ways from my Bentley experience. So it challenged me and helped me grow in a lot of ways that, you know, I'm sure I would have grown a lot if I stayed at Bentley, but it just helped me grow in different ways than I would have had I stayed. And, you know, my Bentley coach and I, like, that's my favorite coach of all time. Like he's, you know, he's my kind of like style, like older, always hard on me all the time, holding me to be the best I could be. And here it was just different. Like he was the younger coach. He's in his third year coaching. So with, you know, the transfer portal and the way things are, like the style of coaching is, you know, it's switching to be a little more different than what it's used to be. So it helped me just look at the game differently than, you know, I naturally have like my whole life. So
we're definitely going to talk more about the impact that your Bentley coach had on you later in the episode. But you're bringing up a good point about the transfer portal, bro. I don't mean to get too off topic, but I kind of want to hear, like, just your perspective on the transfer portal, like, coming in. Like, you were All-American at Bentley, right? You were killing in the NE10, and then you're in the transfer portal trying to find the next home. What did that look like for you? Like coaching search, making sure a team is a good fit. Like, I want to hear about that side of it.
Yeah. I mean, the transfer portal is, I mean, it's crazy. Like, there's gotta be more regulations for it. It's a little crazy. I personally think there should just be contracts. Honestly, like, I just think it would make the whole thing more simple, but,
I never heard someone say that. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah. I mean, you might as well call it semi-professional sports. Like, that's basically what it's become now. Like, every Division I player, not every, but, I shouldn't say every, but most schools like are getting paid. Like, so, you might as well just call it what it is. And, you know, like coaches.
Wait, I want to hear a little bit more. Like, if you could elaborate on how that would work though, like, I don't know. I feel like if we're student athletes and you're signing contracts, then you can't really say it's college at that point. Like if it's signing contracts, like with the term NIL, it still makes it to where it's not professional. So I'm just curious, like how you think that would work? I mean, we're not working in the NCAA, but I'm just curious if you have thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, all like, for example, like think of the Big Ten, like the Big Ten now has UCLA, USC, Washington, Oregon, I want to say, are the four new teams in the Big Ten. Like, when are they ever in school? Like, they're traveling. They're literally traveling coast to coast every single day. So,
yeah, like Cali's in the ACC.
Yeah, like it's okay. Like, you just call it, like, you're getting paid. Like, I bet you those guys at USC, like, for example, I mean, they're all probably making a lot of money. Like, and they chose that school to play basketball. They didn't choose USC for academics. No matter what you say. So, you know, if they were choosing a school for academics, like USC is a great school, but you know, they'd go somewhere else, but you know, so they're going there for basketball and they're making money and, you know, like they might as well just call it semi-professional, make contracts, make it so that, you know, schools could sign guys for multiple years if you want, or 1 year. Like, you would just make the whole situation, I feel like, a little more regulated, and there would be like stuff within the contract to say, like, I don't know, like I feel like it'd just be more like black and white than.
No, I like that. The NCAA might need to hire you.
I don't know. I'm just that's just my thought, but I mean, I'm sure there's no real answer to fix the whole situation. It's going to be madness, I feel like, probably for a while, and maybe even more so. But yeah, I mean, my thoughts on the transfer portal, like I do think most guys leave for the wrong reasons. And for me, like I really thought like I was coming back to Bentley for my like fifth year. Cause I mean, it was like the dream basketball scenario for me. Like I love Coach Lawson, my best friends there. And I love the way the programs run. Like I want to come back and like have an ultimate goal of winning the national championship. Like, I really like could not have loved my Bentley experience any more than I did. Like, it gave me everything I wanted from like within the program experience. But like what drives me personally is like to reach my full potential and challenge myself. Like, I love the challenge. And I felt like after I thought like I was going to stay for my fifth year, like I just felt like I needed to challenge myself against like a different level of athlete than I'd experienced before. And I'm grateful I did the move because it has exposed me to a lot of what I need to improve now, you know, to prepare myself for overseas. But yeah, it was a tough decision to leave Bentley. And I think most guys, they take for granted the situations they have a little too much. And they just leave because maybe they don't like their coach, or, you know, instead when they just maybe need to get better. So, I mean, I think that's most situations, but not all. I mean, there are guys that leave for the right reasons and leave to go to a higher level and make a lot of money. So, I mean, you can't fault them. So I'd say probably like 80% of the guys are leaving for the wrong reasons.
Dude, I mean, you're coming in from D2 and like coming into a D1 situation with like basically like bright eyes. Like, you don't really know what to expect. You're just kind of seeing everything for the first time. So your perspective on the transfer portal, contracts for athletes, it's all unique, bro. You know what I mean? Because you're coming in with this different perspective than your other teammates. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting too, you're talking about like you want to stay at Bentley because you experienced a lot of winning, bro, early on in your college career. I mean, you went to the Elite Eight your first year and the Sweet 16 the next, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, How do you think this impacted your overall college career, like having all this winning, but ultimately too, like your professional career and what you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start for sure and saying like I was spoiled right away. Like my first season, we called it like the triple crown. Like we won the conference regular season, the conference tournament, and then the region for like the Elite Eight. So I mean, like literally like could not have asked more for my first season. And, you know, like, I just expected, like, that was going to happen, like, every single year after that, you know. So, I had a really, like, that was a really special team. And, you know, we almost did it again the next year. Like, we finished, yeah. I want to say, second in the regular season and then lost in the semis and then lost in the Sweet 16. But, the winning showed, like, how much fun college basketball is. And, like, it made this year tough in a lot of ways because, I mean, we finished 6-12 in conference. I mean, overall, we had a winning record because the non-con we were playing were some of the lower Division I teams. But, I mean, it made, like, this year a lot of, like, pretty frustrating by conference play for me because I was just used to winning, like, from what I've experienced so far. So, it made it pretty tough in a lot of ways. But, I wouldn't trade for the world. Like, it was the greatest, like, experience, like, you know, in a lot of ways. So, yeah.
No, that's super tough, bro. I want to circle back to something, go back to your high school days, bro. You're from Connecticut. You went to Notre Dame High School. We're going to talk a little bit more about what you did. But I was just kind of curious. Some of my teammates are from Connecticut. And low-key, I say all the time, like, Connecticut is bad hoops. Like, there's no bump there. But I'm just kind of curious, how, like, what's your perspective on that and, like, how it was growing up in Connecticut for you? Playing hoops.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Connecticut is not the best. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to knock that. But, I mean, we got some hoopers, but, I mean, if you're compared to other states, like, yeah, for sure, like, other states. But, yeah, I mean, Notre Dame was a great experience for me. Like, so my dad's, he teaches there. So I kind of had, like, 24/7 gym access there because of him, which was really great for me. Like, I was able to work out for school and, you know, really just live there all day, like, because he was there, you know, coaching football and grading papers till like whatever. So I was just able to live in the gym like all day while I was in high school, honestly. So that was really nice for me. But from competition, I mean, I thought it hurt my recruiting a little bit because I didn't really play I wasn't on a circuit team. I played AAU with like local, more friends of mine that were all kind of similar guys to me. So playing Connecticut basketball did not give me good recruiting exposure. But honestly, it probably was the best thing for me at the time because I became really confident. Like, I was a baseball player my whole life growing up, and then I kind of switched to basketball in high school, which I was not naturally my best sport. So it kind of was good for me to play against maybe competition that wasn't as good as like New York or New Jersey, some of these states that, you know, helped me become confident so that when I got to college, I, you know, believed in myself more than maybe I would have had I seen like the higher level athletes earlier.
Yeah, I mean, you were the guy, bro. You were first team all state, Southern Connecticut player of the year, was killing at Notre Dame High School. But I was kind of curious. My original question was just going to be like, what was recruitment out of high school looking like for you? And why did you decide Bentley?
Yeah, I was just getting recruited by D3s mostly in the fall. Like in the fall of my senior year, I went on a couple of visits to some Division III schools. And then about halfway through my high school season, some D2 started talking to me. I mean, I had D1 interest, nothing. Like there was one school that watched me play like 7 times that didn't offer, which kind of looks silly on them now. But there was a couple other schools that were looking at me too. That, you know, if I had played better when they came to watch me, maybe I would have got an offer. I don't know. But I didn't shoot the ball well enough in high school by my senior year. So is like not a totally above the rim guy. Like I have one college career dunk. So it's not like I'm a freak athlete by any means. You know, you got to shoot the ball pretty good. And I didn't shoot that well in high school. So I was kind of more like the D2 guy. And I was deciding between Bentley and St. Anselm, who was our rival, actually. And I liked both a lot, but just decided on Bentley. Just felt like I trusted Coach Lawson a lot. Honestly, that's really the decider. Ended up working out. So,
you were geeked when you got that one career dunker.
No, it was actually kind of crazy. As it was in the half court, and it was like a semi body. Like, it wasn't even like I had opportunities on fast breaks where I probably could have dunked, and I didn't. And that's kind of random that that was the one. But yeah, no, it was pretty good. It was pretty good for it to be the only one.
Bro, you talking about not being a shooter when you were in high school, but I'm looking at your college stats from Bentley, bro. You were blicking it like 44% your first year, 41 the next, and then 0.399 your last year at Bentley, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. So what do you think was clicker for you? Like, you were just getting on the gun more or just trusted your shot? Like,
not actually quite. Like, it was pretty the opposite. Like, in high school, I shot a lot. Like, I mean, I was good as a sophomore in high school shooting, but then I just was lifting a lot. I lifted a lot in high school, and I felt like it affected my shot. I mean, I was taking like 500 shots a day. It wasn't like I was putting in the reps, but it wasn't. I learned like the difference of like working hard and working smart. Like, in high school, I was in the gym for like 6 to 8 hours a day, like every single day, 6 days a week, one off day, and it wasn't translating to the game when I got to college. Like, I wouldn't have played freshman year, which was COVID, had we had a season, because I couldn't make decisions. Like, my nickname was like Robot. Like, I wasn't like a basketball player. I wasn't fluid like that, you know? So I had to really like learn how to make like my training game like, and that was the biggest jump, like after COVID, because I wasn't a good shooter that year either. I didn't even know like when I was open. So I just learned how to train, make my, you know, work a lot of my conditioning. And it's kind of similar to this season in a lot of ways. Like, I shot the ball a little bit worse this year than normally because I had to use a lot more energy defensively than I've had to my career at Bentley. And it took a hit like on my offensive like efficiency and stuff like that. So like, now I learned like I got to really step up my conditioning to another level now. And that's really just the biggest thing. Like, I feel like when I have good conditioning, like, that's really translated to my shot. So,
bro, this is a little bit of like a basketball nerd question, but so you're talking about like building your workouts and stuff like that. And like, I'm trying to like get into coaching and like training and like player development this summer. So I'm kind of curious, how did you build your workouts so they're better, so they're more game-like, you know what I mean? Like, I want to hear about that.
Yeah, so it's definitely tough if you don't have a person to go live against. Like, yep. I ultimately think the best way to get better at playing basketball is just playing basketball. So like 5-on-5 or 1-on-1, like threes, like literally whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you probably looked at the best basketball players in the world, I bet you almost all of them grew up on a park, you know, growing up, like playing just pickup all the time. So I think that's the best way to get better. But in 1-on-0 skills training, I think you can make a game like in a lot of ways, like as long as you're making yourself uncomfortable in some type of way and making a reaction or a decision, I think that helps. Like, I always would have a rebounder and call like reactions. Like, I have like drills called like audio reactions, and like, I'll do like a game like action. I always am coming off ball screens, stuff like that. So let's say I come off a pin down, and if I hear no audio call, I'm going to shoot the ball, because my first look every time I catch the ball should be shot. But if they do call a reaction like left or right, you know, then I got to drive to my left as efficiently as possible. And, you know, if I hear nothing else, like, now I'm thinking rim, because I'm thinking I want to finish at the rim. But they could also give me like a pull up call and have to react and shoot a pull up. So that's just like a quick little example of like how I incorporate reactions and decision making into my game, like actions that I'm going to get. So, and I think ultimately for me at this point in my career, like, the biggest thing is that like I'm in elite shape, because no matter what, like, I'm not going to be, like I said, jumping above the rim, but I could beat these more athletic guys because I'm in like 2 times their conditioning. So I think in my training, as long as I'm pushing my conditioning and making reactions and doing the stuff that I'm going to do in a game, that's really just what translates the most, you know, outside of playing live.
Yeah. I was kind of curious about, I was going to ask you like how you think your game developed over the years at Bentley, but we talked about that and you're talking about your workouts, but I was having this conversation the other day about like your game specifically. And I was saying that like, you don't do anything like crazy good. Like, you're not a deadly shooter. You're not going to like break somebody down off the dribble. You're not extremely talented in the post, but like, you do all those things like good. So I was just kind of curious what you think like the, like, I know you said conditioning, but the actual basketball focus is for you moving forward in your workouts, like, because you just have, like, really good feel, but I was curious if you think, like, there's one specific part of your game that you've got to, like, focus in on.
Yeah, 100%. That's really good analysis. I think that's what made me thrive so much in Division II and what I learned when I got to that Atlantic 10 level, that I could still be a really good player, but if I want to, you know, kind of have the impact that I had at Bentley, I've got to kind of have, like, a superpower in terms of, like, my talent. And my feel of the game is probably my biggest strength, but, you know, skill wise, I need to definitely lock in on one or two things. And I think the two biggest things for me, offensively speaking, are just shooting. Like, yeah, but I think that comes with conditioning. Like, I think if my conditioning is at all time high, my shooting will be, I'll be able to get, like, whatever shot I want and shoot on balance with power. So, I think shooting conditioning kind of go together for that. And then dynamic, like, guard skills, like off the dribble creation. Like, I definitely need to create for myself better off the dribble and be a more fluid mover. Steph Curry is a good example of this. Like, he kind of is like he's kind of like the perfect model for anyone who's not a freak athlete. Like, he's in, you know, five times the shape of anyone else, like, in the league, it looks like. You know, he's able to play almost 40 minutes, and he plays twice as hard as anybody. So, but, and he shoots the crap out of the ball. So those, he's got those two things going for him. And, like, he's really fluid. Like, he really could, like, create for himself off the dribble, whatever shots he wants, or for his teammates. So I think those are really just the biggest things. Like, I need to maybe lose a little bit of weight, get in better shape while still maintaining strength, and then become an elite shooter and a better, more fluid ball handler that could be more of a natural two rather than a three. So,
no, that's a really good answer, bro. And we're going to continue talking about your career. Stay with us while we take a quick break.
All right, we're back with the Not Even D2 podcast. Our guy, Zach LaPute. Coming into Davidson, like, you earned NABC Division II All-America honors both in 2023 and 2024. You were named NE10 Player of the Year after your second consecutive 600-point season, which is super tough. Two back-to-back 600 points. That's a lot of buckets. But I'm just wondering, like, how did it feel, like, winning those accolades, but also kind of having team success along with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's well said. Like, ultimately, like, my favorite, I don't know, either of my first two seasons were my favorite, when we won the Triple Crown, or that year after when we made the Sweet 16 and I had the individual success on top of that. And at this point, when I look back, like, my favorite memories are from that first season, the Elite Eight, and then the next year after that, when we were really good again too. So, like, it felt really good. It felt validating for everything that I had worked on. But yeah, it honestly wasn't the same as, like, the winning the championships and stuff, I have to say. But I mean, it was very validating to the work, for sure. Like, it is a driving force. Like, individual goals are a driving force, your off seasons, like, they should be. But I think team success should be just as equally too, because if you're really that good of a player, your team should be winning. And, like, you guys said, you interviewed Trey Alexander, like, his team was really good this year. Like, that's why he won the Player of the Year. Like, you're only going to win those awards if your team's at the top of the league. So it means you're actually impacting winning. So it feels good when your team, like, makes a run in the postseason as well. But yeah, those awards were validating for sure.
100%, bro. Winning makes everything better too. Like, when you can look back at your college career and be like, damn, we did this, you know what I mean? Like, and have those accolades to go along with it is always a special thing. And talking about contributing to winning, I mean, we mentioned him earlier, Coach Lawson. And, you know, Coach Lawson talking to you, you know, other guys from Bentley, Cash, right? Like, all these guys, like, they really respect this guy, man. I've never had a chance to talk to him, meet him, but just heard a lot of great things about him. And I'm just wondering, what type of impact did he have on you, bro? I want to hear about that relationship that you had with him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's had the greatest impact on me in my life outside of my parents by far. You know, I feel like I tell, like, my friends here at Davidson, you know, if they were to meet my coach at Bentley, they would understand, like, a lot of the reasons why I am the way I am. Just like my thoughts for the game, like I've always been very like anti social media because of him personally. Just like talking about yourself. He showed just like the purity of like the game and enjoying the game for itself. Like you don't need other people's validation, in terms of like other people's opinions. And if you just do the work and, you know, like you have your own success, like that'll, like you'll appreciate that internally, like more than anything else. I mean, that's just like one of like many things. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I literally wouldn't be who I am today without him. Like, honestly, like I just love, like he held me accountable every day to be the best I could be. And it was on me harder. Like even the older I got, I felt like a lot of times, and just like wouldn't settle for me being any less than like my potential. So, and he has a lot of values. Like you kind of got to be around him all the time to really like learn. And the locker room every year is super close because of him. Like he really changes your perspective on life in a lot of ways, just like what matters, especially in today's world. So, but it's funny, like to the social media point, like I was going to make, like, I have like thoughts about like putting out content to like help like the younger generation with like just stuff I've learned from my experience and training and stuff. So it's kind of funny because he obviously like
contradicting each other.
Yes, which, because I agree to everything he says, but I think there's some value to it too. So, but yeah, I mean, he's had a big impact on me and just the way that I go about, like, not like you don't need to celebrate when you hit shots. Like, that's like one of his biggest pet peeves. Like, is like if you hit a shot, like you shoot an arrow, like, I mean, you would come out of the game immediately. Like, you know, I got a technical foul. I only got one technical foul in college and I like got mad at a ref. Like, it was the first year I won the player of the year. And so, you know, ego is getting a little big, probably. Like, I think I could get away with a little more. And I said something to a ref one time because I thought I should have caught a foul. Probably, it honestly wasn't really that bad. Like, I should have got text for things worse than that. But, like, I got the tech called, and, yeah, my ass was on the bench for a long part of that game afterwards. Stuff like that. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, we're all equal. We all have to contribute to winning. So, just understanding, like, the value of team success and like now seeing it, like everything you said is obviously right. Like all my best memories are from winning rather than anything I've done and whatever. So, yeah, I mean, he's special. I think he would be one of the greatest coaches ever, like world renowned if he coached Division I and like wanted to move up, but he just loves coaching Bentley. So a lot of people don't know about him, but I was lucky enough to play for him.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to Coach Lawson. Definitely. I'm glad he left that impact on you because that was powerful, bro. And I feel like when you're around those type of coaches, you can't really boil it down to like one or two things that they might have said or done to you. Just like being around them every day, it's just like the dudes at Bentley could probably all say similar things that you can't really articulate, but it's just like being in that energy impacted you crazy.
Right. It's like, yeah, I mean, I can think of like a million different things. It's like, how could I pick like one little thing that he's, you know, impacted me on? I'm sure everyone have a different answer if you were to ask them how he's impacted them. So, yeah.
All right. We're going to end this episode with one more question before we get to rapid fire. But I know you're trying to play overseas. Just talk about like that process as a whole, getting an agent, working out, what countries you're trying to play in. Just talk about that.
Yeah, so I've just been talking to agents the last week. Probably will sign with one in the next upcoming weeks. And then it'll be picking a team in a country. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting stuff. We'll see. Hopefully, I like, you know, it'll be different living in a country, you know, away from my family and friends. So there's that part to it. But I am excited. I am really excited for the challenge, and I think I will like it a lot. And some of the countries I'm looking at are Austria, Germany, Belgium, Finland, Netherlands, Sweden. Those are probably like my target countries for year one. Mm-hmm. And just finding like the place that fits my style of play the best and is the best situation for me in my first year to really establish myself in Europe, do well individually and do it on a winning team. I mean, that is really how you earn the ultimate respect as a player, especially as a rookie. So I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, I'm excited for the challenge for sure.
Do you have anyone in your corner right now, like that's playing overseas or pro, that's kind of helping you through this process, or you're asking advice?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I literally was just talking to my parents about this earlier, how, like, I feel like I've been, like, I don't know who has more resources than me, like, in terms of this, like, overseas thing. Like, when I'm home in Connecticut, like, what's helped me a lot at Bentley, too, is a lot of the guys I'm closest with who I train with are older overseas pros. Like, all the guys are older. Like, some of them are retired now. Like one of them is his name's Brandon Sherrod. He's an assistant coach at Yale. He just retired from playing overseas. He's been a huge influence on me. And I have about like 7 to 8 guys that are overseas or retired from overseas that all have offered like different tremendous advice from their experiences and how to help me best for mine. And the people at Davidson, like just from the connections they have, and just all the stuff I'm learning, like I need to prepare for. I'm very lucky with the resources I have to give me the best advice to prepare right now.
That's tough, bro. You definitely got a bright future. We big fans, so keep it up, bro. We're going to be following. But we got in this episode with a rapid fire, starting 5 edition. So let us know when you're ready for the rapid fire.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Real quick, bro, before we get into rapid fire, you've been talking to Jordan Mello Klein.
Oh, that's the boy right there, yeah.
You've been talking to him about playing pro because he's like that, bro. I've watched his film. He's tough.
Yeah, he is definitely like that. That's for sure. He's really good. Yeah, I've been talking to him a little bit. And, yeah, I mean, that's the boy right there. He's really good.
OD, Bentley definitely has some pros, bro. But, yeah, let's get into this rapid fire. First one I wanted to ask, bro, what was your favorite A-10 arena that you played in this past year? You can name 2 or 3 if you want. Mm.
Okay, the best one is Dayton. It fits like 16,000 and they fill it every single game, so I mean that's the best one. But my personal favorite was probably Rhode Island. I like it. It's like they packed our game. I don't know if they pack all the games, but I mean I don't know how much they fit, maybe like 6,000 to 8,000, and it felt sold out for our game. Like, and they were loud. Like, they were really loud. Like, the fans were kind of like, I don't know. It wasn't like they were just like peaceful fans. Like, they were having a fun time for sure. So that was my favorite away game to play in so far.
Next rapid fire question. What was like your welcome to Division I basketball moment? Did you have one? I'm kind of wondering about that.
Mm. Welcome to Division I basketball. I mean, Arizona B is pretty good. But honestly, I thought Gonzaga was the best team we played. That was probably welcome to Division I moment. Like, Arizona was good. They were just really big. Like, we couldn't compete with them as much because they were all, like, I mean, their big was, like, 7'3", 270, and their four was, like, 6'8", 240. Like, and all the other guys are, like, 6'4", 6'5", strong. So, I mean, they were just big. They were just a little too big for us. But Gonzaga was like big and like really good.
For sure. Next rapid fire question, bro. So I know KJ was throwing a little bit of shade to Connecticut basketball, but I'm wondering if you can name 3 guys that you grew up playing with that you were like, yeah, they were super tough, that you just want to show some love.
Yeah, I mean, there's one guys that I personally played with now or – Well, the thing is, like, a lot of the guys I played with growing up, like, I didn't meet a lot of the Connecticut guys that are really good till I was older.
Okay.
Like,
it doesn't have to be someone you play with too. It could just be hoopers you want to shout out.
I'll shout out Connecticut guys I played against. There's Tyler Arbuckle, who played at St. Anselm. I played against him, and it was funny. Like, when I was getting recruited to St. Anselm, like, that was a talk. Like, we would pair up. So I mean, that would have been interesting how it went. Yeah. I obviously am very happy I chose Bentley, but I think I would have enjoyed playing for him. He's like very competitive and a hard worker. So Tyler Arbuckle, he's super tough, like unknown guy. I don't think he could have played Division I, but he chose not to. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's good hoopers around. Like, I don't know.
Did you ever play against Klingon? Yeah, I was gonna ask about him.
I've never played against him, but yeah. I would like, I'm sure that would be an experience. I don't know if I'd be able to get a shot around the rim. I'd probably have to shoot straight pull-ups and floaters.
Who was that kid that went to Georgetown? Primo something?
Primo Spears, yeah. He's my class. Probably would have played him in like the state championship or semifinals my senior year of high school. But COVID, like that was COVID, so we didn't have a state tournament. Yeah, he's really good. He's played at a bunch of different schools. I don't even know where he is right now. But he's super talented. There's some other guys from my grade, like Matt Noling. He played at Yale and now he's at USC. Also from Windsor, where Primo Spears is, his kid Corey McKeithen. He's at LaSalle in my conference now in the A-10. There's like Desmond Claude. He's a little bit younger. He's at USC. But yeah, I mean, those are some of the guys from my class. Yeah,
good hoopers for sure. But we're going to end this episode with a starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the best any 10 players you played against. So just tell me where they played at and what position you would put them at.
Could I take Bentley guys? Or
is yeah, that... you can, and you can include yourself too.
All right. Any 10 edition? Oh, man. All right. Point guard is Jordan Mello Klein for sure. He was the best point guard I've ever seen in – oh, actually. Yeah, he's the best point guard I've ever seen in the any 10 probably. I would be the three.
Okay.
I would be the three on that team. My center, that would be Patrick Gardner. He played at St. Michael's, and he finished his career at Marist. Mm. Played in the G League.
Oh, yeah. Trey was talking about him yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, he might be in the G League still.
2-4.
2-4? Oh, man. There's a lot of guys. All right. So then at my two, I'm going to have Tyler Arbuckle.
Mm-hmm.
And my four, I'll have Brian Powell. And then honorable mention, Isaiah Moore coming off the bench. Might lead us in points for real.
That spark plug, yeah, coming in as Superman.
Yeah, he'll be Superman coming off. Yeah.
No, that's a tough lineup, bro. And that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you getting on, bro. Like I said, bright future. So get on that grind and we're going to be following.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.